Today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Blossom, birdsong and bees, they're all the lovely sights and sounds of nature that we expect at this time of year. But bats are also waking up from hibernation and taking flight. So where should you go and what should you be looking for if you're hoping to see them? I'm joined on the line now by Dr. Niamh Roach from Bat Conservation Ireland. Good morning, Niamh.
Good morning, Claire. Thanks for having me on.
You're very welcome. You love bats.
Of course I do. Of course I do. What's not to love about a bat?
Where do you want me to start?
I know they have a bad rep.
They
don't
have a bad rep, and I've spoken about this before. Like my last run in with a bat was, it was flying around the bedroom, and I was hiding under the duvet. And I you'd have to convince me on this one. What is it about them that you like?
Well, they're fascinating. They have fascinating life cycles. They do a lot for us in our environment in terms of eating lots of pests and insects that we don't like midges and mosquitoes. They're fascinating. They can find their way around in the dark using just sound. They have a whole, you know, three-dimensional view of what's around them just using sound. So there's loads of stuff, really.
Yeah, they are very interesting, and they're also very clever, aren't they? And this is not their breeding season, but their birthing season. Is that right?
That's right, yeah. So bats are at this time of year, basically, people are probably starting to notice bats in the evening. You know, the nights are, or the evenings are stretching, and at twilight then we're starting to get a little bit more bat activity. So what they've been doing up until now is they've been hibernating. So our bats, you know, they eat insects. But unlike swallows, say, which are, you know, they undergo large migrations to go to warm places where there are still insects over the winter, so they go to Africa. Our bats don't migrate long distances like that. So they have to basically adapt to the fact that there's not enough insects for them to eat over the winter. And they do that by hibernating. So they hibernate through the winter months, and then around this time of year, so it'll be kind of late spring, early summer, they start to become more active again, and there's more insects for them to eat, so they start flying more at night. And then at this time of the year, then the females gather together in roosts. A place where a bat lives is called a roost. And the female bats tend to gather together in maternity roosts. And then after a pregnancy of about 40 days, they give birth. So it would be sometime maybe in June or thereabouts.
Mm-hmm. But they have some control over that pregnancy, don't they, the females?
Yeah, well, it's another reason bats are fascinating, yes. So basically the pregnancy will slow down if the weather gets bad, certainly in the early stages of pregnancy. So if we get really cold snap, you know, the way you often do in May, the pregnancy will actually take longer. So we think that the average pregnancy length is about 40 days, but it can actually be, you know, a couple of weeks longer than that if the weather's been bad in the summer.
But there's more to it, isn't there? Because they mate back in the autumn.
That's right.
But the female delays ovulation until she's sure that she's ready.
That's right, yeah. And then, so the ovulation would be in the spring, around now, and then they would become pregnant and, yeah, have the baby.
It's
later
extraordinary.
On.
So they're monitoring the conditions. They're monitoring the weather, and then obviously the food supply off the back of that before they say right now is the right time, or before their body say.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's all obviously evolved in, you know, in terms of having a kind of an unstable food supply. So, you know, this gives them the best chance of having a successful pregnancy. And they only have one pup, you know, so they're not reproducing like mice or rabbits or whatever. They're, you know, it's a sort of a long life cycle for them. And actually, bats can live quite long, have quite long lives. We have a bat in Russia has been found. It's 41, 42 years old now, a Brandt's bat in Russia.
I wonder how they age them.
So that bat would have been ringed 40-odd years ago, and then it's been found every year since. So that's how, you know, they know that some bats have lived very long lives, older than a lot of us.
The maternity roosts then, are they different, or are they looking for specific locations as opposed to a regular roost?
Yeah, so generally what they're looking for is somewhere warm. So a maternity roost is generally a place that gets hot in the summer, and it basically will then give the young a better chance of survival, you know, because they'll have been in high temperatures and kept nice and warm, and then their survival rate will be higher. So sometimes they can be in attics of dwelling houses. Sometimes they might be in old buildings and churches. Sometimes they might even be in cracks in trees, under bridges. But generally, they're looking for places that are warm in the summer.
And how do you know if you have bats in the attic?
Well, you don't always know, actually, to be honest. I mean, I know that I've got bats in my attic here, in my roof space here, but I never see them in the attic. You know, we might be up and down to the attic a bit, you know, with all the various bits that you have in an attic. But I've never actually seen a bat there, but I have seen them come out of the soffit and fascia. So I know that there are bats in parts of it or under the roofing felt, but they never come into the attic space. So generally people will see either, they might see droppings, depending on what species it is, if they are in, you know, coming into the attic space. And those droppings might look a bit like a mouse dropping, but if you squish them, they'll turn into dust because they're just made of the kind of the hard bits of the insects, whereas a mouse dropping would be hard, or if it was really fresh, it'd be squishy and yucky. And you'd be sorry you did that. So anyway, a bat dropping is just made up of the indigestible bits of insects.
And is it toxic to touch? Should you be careful?
Well, you wear gloves or just squish it with something else. Don't use your hand, you know.
They're protected, so if they are in your house, you're not permitted to do anything about it, are you?
No. But if you have concerns, we would suggest that you talk to your local wildlife ranger. You know, some people, can depend on the situation. You know, if they're constantly coming into the living space, you know, bats don't want to be in your living space. You know, they don't want to be around humans. But, you know, so if there's problems where they keep coming in or something like that, we would say to people, please talk to your local wildlife ranger.
Okay, so if they're flying around the house, you can talk to somebody about getting some help with that.
Yeah, they're very
small, though, and we have this cartoonish image of them being quite large and scary and flying around at Halloween with red eyes. They're very small creatures in reality, aren't they?
Absolutely, and our most common species are called pipistrelles. They weigh only about 5 grams, which is about the same as a teaspoon of sugar. And with their wings folded up, they will literally fit into a small matchbox. So they're really tiny.
Oh, they're very small.
Yeah, but they look big, you know, with their wings stretched out, you know, they sort of look like maybe the size of a robin or something, you know. When you see them flying at night, it's very hard to get an idea of scale, so you might think they're much bigger than they are. And often people will get in touch with us and say, we found baby bats, when in actual fact, they have adult bats, you know, or they're seeing adult bats, but they're so small, people expect that they're babies. I think in the kind of horror movies, they often use like big fruit bats and things like that because they're big and scary. But of course, they're way bigger than anything we have in Ireland.
Just going back to that issue of people being unhappy that the bats are living in the attic. And you know what some people do when they see the bats going out hunting at night? They might block up the entrance. Now, that can be a very cruel thing to do. Explain why.
Of course, because the babies would be inside the attic and waiting for their mothers to come back and feed them with milk. So basically you'd end up then with the females outside, the babies trapped and entombed inside, and would obviously die if the mothers can't get to them. Mm-hmm. So we would always say to people, please talk to somebody, an expert, and, you know, get help if you're really, really concerned, you're really scared of the bats. So please talk to somebody, and, you know, if something has to be done like that, that it would be done humanely and done in the winter when, you know, the bats are not there.
And with your conservation hat on now, Niamh, where are we at with our bat population?
Yeah, so, well, we do track bat populations actually with the help of hundreds of volunteers across Ireland every year. And so for some species, we're happy that they're doing pretty well. Those species tend to be the very adaptable ones, like the pipistrelles that I mentioned earlier. They're the ones that are kind of happy enough with sort of being around urban spaces and things like that. But we have some that are, we think, possibly declining, but because they're rare, it's much harder to track them, you know, as accurately. But we really are trying to get a good handle on what's happening with bat populations. We think the ones that are increasing, which those common ones, are probably increasing in line with climate change. So maybe the warmer winter temperatures are, you know, benefiting them in terms of survival rates.
And you want people to help you with that, to help you assess what's going on with the bat population?
We do, we do. We call for volunteers every year. We have a great great scheme called the Waterways Monitoring Scheme, where we monitor a particular bat called Albenton's bat. And people go out to their local waterways and do a kilometre-long walk, and they count bats while they walk using a bat detector. So we are always asking for new volunteers on that scheme. And also we have a project that we're running with UCD at the moment, and we're investigating the ecosystem services that bats provide. So we're actually asking people who have bat roosts to go up into their attics and lay down newspaper and use a special kit that we've provided. We will provide them to sample the bat droppings and send them on to UCD, who will be doing state-of-the-art DNA sequencing on them to find out what the bats are eating and what types of bats they are.
Okay, so how do we get our hands on those kits if we want to get involved?
So that's at batsandbugs.ie. So batsandbugs.ie. So okay. Anybody can sign up there if they have a bat roost and they're willing to pop up and do that sampling.
Have a look. Have a root through the bat poo.
Don't worry. We provide masks and gloves and tweezers and everything. So you won't have to get too close or anything.
Listen, there's something else really interesting about this, because if you're trying to listen out for bats, the likelihood is you're not going to be able to hear them. But if you're a child, or if you're a woman, you've got a better chance.
Well, we tend to have higher frequency hearing than men do. But children have the best high frequency hearing of all. But even at that, really, the only bits that we tend to be able to hear of bat sounds, in Ireland anyway, are the kind of social calls, which are a little bit lower frequency. We can kind of hear up to about 20 kilohertz, and bats' echolocation calls usually are much higher than that, so we can't hear them. So we use what we call a bat detector. It looks like a little tiny, I don't know, a little device like a smartphone or something like that. But basically it picks up the sounds that the bats are making and converts it into something that we can hear with our ears. So that
might be a way if you don't really fancy going through the poo or looking for bat poo.
Sure.
You could get one of these bat detectors and maybe assess whether you've got them in your house.
Yeah. So they're available on sort of wildlife supplier websites and that. And also, if somebody's interested in doing that waterway survey with us in August, we actually have a library of bat detectors available to lend to people who are volunteering on that scheme. Okay. So if they want to sign up to that, they can get one.
Do bats fly into people's faces and get caught in people's hair?
I have long hair, Claire, and I've been working on bats for well over 20 years, and I have never had a bat caught in my hair.
Never once
have I heard. I mean, you know, I've heard of people who said that they knew someone who knew someone who once got a bat caught in their hair, but I've never met that person yet.
Yeah, but you see, the bats have their little sonar. How would they end up in your hair, really, if you think about it logically?
I mean, I think where that might come from is that, you know, the way if you walk along a rural road or, you know, by a river at night, you get sort of columns of insects kind of over your head.
Yes.
You know, the way the midges and stuff. And I think, you know, you will get bats flying around eating the insects. So it seems like they're close to you and that they might get caught in your hair, but they're never going to do that.
They're not interested.
No,
never mind what Alfred Hitchcock says. They're not interested in our hair.
Exactly.
Niamh, thank you so much. Lovely to talk to you. And
Bat
Conservation Ireland is Niamh Roach's organisation. And you can have a look at the project on there. They're trying to assess the bat population, which is a good, interesting one. And as you say, you can go up to your attic and have a look and see if they're there, but don't disturb.